Hello everyone and welcome to the latest episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name's Scott Coyne and I'll be your host for this week's episode, and joining me to discuss the week in Belgian football is our very own resident Belgian and man of many talents who has recently just moved house. It's Mr. Joris Beck. How are you this evening, Joris?
Indeed, I just moved, so that was also the reason why I was absent. Not last week, although that also was I wasn't available either, but the week before that. And it was also not the reason why we did not have a recording last week, or not solely because of that. Life's good so far. A bit longer talking about this than usually, even.
Yeah, there's been a lot going on, hasn't there? This is the second week our Ben isn't with us. We should probably tell everybody, actually, because Ben might not be with us as often as he has been recently, because last week our Ben became a dad for the first time. So we love a bit of good news here at the BFP. And Ben's probably sleeping right now as we record. So what we'll try and do, everybody, is wake him up for you at some point and get him to join us, which I'm sure he will when he's... When things have settled a little bit, as you can imagine, you'll be hugely busy at the moment. Absolutely delighted for Ben and his wife, Sophie. Brilliant news.
As far as I could get, he still watched a lot of Belgian football, so I'm not sure. It doesn't seem like a big deal, actually.
Yeah,
congratulations, nonetheless, of course.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the perfect time for us to share with everybody that actually last Thursday... Ben dropped me and Joris a lovely little picture of him sitting on the couch at home with the wee man. So he's already started him watching Belgian football, which, you know, is brownie points already as far as we're concerned. So you'll be joining us as a guest soon.
Ben, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. And he'll bring the wee man with him as well. I have absolutely no doubts about it at all. He's welcome any time he wants. Let's dive in, shall we, Joris? Shall we get into the guts of this, as they say, and start with playoff one, the Champions playoff? We score roundup, just in case you don't know the scores this week, everybody. Joris' side, Genk, drew one each with Cercle. Club Brugge beat Antwerp 3-0, and Anderlecht managed 10th time lucky to beat Union Saint-Gilloise 2-1 at Lotto Park in Brussels. So why don't we start, Joris, probably with the big game of the weekend, the big game in Brussels, the big Brussels derby, Anderlecht and Union. As I was saying, Anderlecht, the lucky 10 for them. After 8 defeats and a draw, they finally managed to get the 3 points and managed to achieve what they've been trying to do all season, sit top of the table. They've usurped Union for the moment. And Brian Reimer was understandably absolutely delighted with this, because in truth, they weren't brilliant, Anderlecht, but they got it done. They were the more efficient of the two, I thought. They've gone top for the first time since, I think, August of 2018. 2018 is a really interesting number in all of this, because it's also the same year that Union last lost 3 games consecutively in the league, which back then they were in the old Division 1B. So, it's a number that has significance for both sides. It says a lot about their consistency, of course, to not lost 3 in the bounce for such a long time like that domestically anyway. But, yeah, Union arguably deserving a little bit more out of this game than they got, but we're down to the business end of the season now, Joris, and it's all about getting it done. And this weekend, Anderlecht did, and it's all change at the top.
Yes, definitely. That also means Union already lost more inside these playoffs than they had in the whole of the regular season. Who would have expected that? Even though, of course, we always feared, or everyone always feared a little bit for Union, given the past 2 seasons, how that went. They actually always have started the playoffs quite badly. But yeah, really 0 points out of 3 games, I don't think anyone would have expected that, even the most negative Union supporter, maybe, or positive from another team to look at it differently. Definitely. Also, it's a little bit worrying, of course, that they lose these points, but also they're conceding a lot in comparison to before. And indeed, efficiency up front either. I think they've got now 3 goals inside these playoffs. And again, 2 of them were penalties, if I'm not mistaken. Which, okay, it's good. That's good. You get these penalties for a reason, of course. There still seems to be some efficiency issues all around the park there. Maybe mainly showing at the back with Maurice, where he's not in the best, hasn't had the best run of form now in crucial times. Always have had my doubts about him as for really in the top sides to have him in a team, and that's always a bit of a liability, I felt. But to be honest, I have to be fair to him. He mainly has not given me any reason to think that anymore. But sometimes it shows, and unfortunately, when the pressure rises, it seems to come up a little more, often. Yeah. It's not only on him, of course. You can just feel the pressure at Union that it had risen so far, also showing in frustrations already in the first game. Since I wasn't there in the last episodes that we just recorded 2 weeks ago, yeah, already in the first game against Genk, there were some frustrations showing on the pitch. Which maybe always have been there, but you usually don't show them so openly, which was a new thing. And it hasn't gotten better, unfortunately, for the side. So maybe it'll, to look at it in a positive way, maybe now they're the chasers again, then the pressure is a little bit off them, that might somehow turn into their favor later on. Of course, there's still 7 games to play. They're 1 game behind. They already had 2 away games as well. This is also always an important factor in the playoffs. I will touch on that on other games as well. But that's definitely not the start I would have hoped for. And on Anderlecht, you said it there, I guess, efficiency. Dolberg got his first goal in 2 months, which is also, could be crucial to get him into confidence. And this one definitely will have done him some good. The role of good. You mentioned it's the first time leading the league since August 2018 when they started really strong, but didn't finish well in that season. So that's another topic. But and it also seems like some key facts we still need to mention about this game, I guess, is like, of course, mainly for Anderlecht's point of view, Anderlecht. The Bast getting sent off, so he's suspended for 1 game now. Of course, also the Thorgan Hazard injury, ACL injury. He's out for the season and, well, for a large part of next season already as well. So wishing him the best and recovery. And yeah, let's see if that actually will harm them, or maybe, like, on the other hand, Amuzu already came in for Hazard and is finally back from his own injury himself. So that might have been somehow a good timing to have that happen. You don't want it to happen, and especially for the person and the player himself, not. But for the squad, maybe it's somehow well timed that that it didn't happen when Amuzu also still was out, or other players. And Burgess was playing. That's also news of the week, I guess. But that was a story that's actually coming from these 2 weeks. Since we were not here last week, that Burgess. In the end, there was a whole soap going on. Maybe we should not dive too deep into it, or maybe we should. But
Burgess Gate. Gate, as many called it. Yeah, I'm kind of glad that's kind of been resolved now, because I was kind of dreading the thought of kind of coming in to this week's episode and that's still rumbling on. So it is good that it reached a kind of speedy conclusion and ultimately a sensible one. I think it'd be fair to say on that particular issue, it was a complete balls up, that whole situation. And thankfully, it kind of got resolved pretty quickly, which is the main thing. You were talking, alluding to sort of Union and pressure. we don't know how Anderlecht are going to respond to the pressure that comes with, you know, having things in their own hands now. Seven games left, it's close, but it's not done yet. And actually, I think one of the things I wanted to emphasise this week was that obviously it could all change again next weekend. It often happens that way. A lot of people are quite keen to kind of burst Union's bubble now and have been for a couple of weeks, but I'm not of that persuasion quite yet. You're right. I think they've started the playoffs badly. They tend to do that. You know, seven games is a long way to go yet. They have a huge game, obviously, coming up this weekend. They've got a home game against Club Brugge in Brussels. And it is kind of a must-win game, obviously. If they were to lose that or even drop points and draw, I think it would be a different conversation we're probably having next week. And it'll be really interesting to see how they respond to that, because, as I was alluding to earlier, they didn't really play that badly. They're just not taking their chances at the moment. And that's obviously something they've been doing consistently throughout the whole season, even when they weren't completely at their best, and now that seems to have gone. I think they've been very honest about acknowledging the pressure. Obviously, Alexander Blessing had that moment a couple of weeks ago in his press conference where he came out and was kind of quite open and aggressive about that in a way that took a lot of people by surprise. I'm of the view that I don't think really helps, because it acknowledges some of that drip feed and just invites negativity, I think. And also a few days ago, Noah Siddiqui was actually saying that there is a bit of nervousness in the camp, which surprised me as well. Sometimes oppositions feed off that acknowledgement. So it's slightly unusual, I think, that some of the camp have been so public about some of the stuff that's been kind of flying around. They just don't quite seem as strong as they've been for a long time. So quite a few questions around them. Yeah, how will Anderlecht respond to those suspensions and injuries? There's plenty of quality and depth there, so I don't think Brian Ryan will be massively worried at the moment. I suppose his bigger worry will be how they respond to, as I was saying, you know, being in the driving seat now, because they've got plenty of difficult fixtures coming up themselves. And actually, just before we got to the playoffs, they obviously dropped those points at home unexpectedly against Kortrijk, when I think we all expected them to narrow the gap at that point. So it's probably worth emphasising it's not done yet, folks. There has been a changing of the guard, but we're far from done yet. And speaking of not being done, some of the other clubs have got quite a big say in where this is going to go yet, don't they?
To throw something back there against Union is, of course, that they themselves also didn't win the last game in the regular season, narrowly didn't, and that seems to be, I don't know if it still plays a role, it shouldn't, but yeah, it plays a role in these playoffs already going in like that. Maybe they would have expected also to by the end of that game at least to take it over the line, and they didn't. In the ranking it should not really make any difference, I believe, even if they would have done that, it would have, but not that big. It could be, every point can be crucial now, of course, even more than ever, but that's four games without a win anyway, so that's should be worrying. Against arguably, of course, that was also against Antwerp on the Bosel, so not the easiest game, but yeah, that's also the opponents, all kinds of opponents they still have to face again, of course.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think one of the things I've noticed about Union kind of, you know, over the last three or four weeks is they're generally pretty solid defensively. And over the last few weeks, that has been anything but the case. You know, it's been much more sieve-like and absolutely the wrong time of the season. So there's definitely lots, I think, for Alexander Blessing and his coaching staff to ponder. Speaking of pondering and coaching staffs, Nicky Hyen at Club Brugge, Joris, club winning 3-0 pretty convincingly against Antwerp this weekend. And amongst the many questions I've got for you this week, three wins out of four, including a decent 1-0 win in Europe on Thursday night against Pauk Thessaloniki as well, in the Conference League. A really solid start by Nicky Hyen, and club are starting not only to come back into contention for the big prize, kind of out of nowhere. It looks like everybody there starting to enjoy themselves a bit again. There's a bit more balance in the side, and those missed chances, although it's still a slight issue for them, we saw it in Europe, they probably deserve to win that game more convincingly than they did by the one goal. They probably should have won by two or three goals. They are looking quite a bit better since Ronnie Dyla left us. No reflection on Ronnie at all. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things. But it's very interesting now that Nicky Hyne in particular seems to, his name has come into the frame for the main job, perhaps on a permanent basis. We know that club have been talking to a number of people on and off for a while. They're still very much in consideration mode there, but he's done himself no harm with the way that things have started for him, has he, Joris?
No, definitely not, especially the results going their way. I'm not sure about, in general, yet the... Obviously, their confidence is growing based on those results as well, but the general level of play, it has been good at times, but for example, the first half of this playoffs against Cercle Brugge, it wasn't. Second half, a lot more. They could have won that game easily by the chances they had. Ultimately, they didn't. But after that, they have won quite convincingly twice. At home, though, there I come back to that as well, of course. They basically... Well, on paper, they've had one away game in these playoffs already, of course, but in theory, and at least in traveling time and so on, and in all kinds of build-up towards the game, it's always been home games. Also, in the one in Europe, that's actually four home games in a row they had. One of those home games between quotation marks, the derby against Cercle Brugge, which was technically away, of course. So that's my main question as well, of course, They need to pick up points now on away as well in these playoffs. If they do so, they might go far. And also, just in general, still a bit. I do feel like they've got a little bit. It's not due to that, but they've not gotten the referee against them yet. Let me say it like that. Like, I feel like the goal against Cercle Brugge, there was a shout. Well, I probably would have said that there was an offside, blocking wireless onside. Similar, there was a goal, the one of the goals against Anderlecht as well. And here, and the first goal against Antwerp also was a little bit of, okay, in the end, it was a correct decision in this case, I think, so that's good, but it was very narrow. It could have gone differently, and and who would have thought that Onyedika would be their top scorer right now, since he scored three goals since the playoff started, since we've been out as well.
Seems to be really enjoying himself at the moment, and of course a lot of people will already know this, I suspect, but Onyedika and Ronnie Dyla didn't really see eye to eye for various reasons, and that's why we never saw the best of him. But now that Ronnie's left, and you know, there's a new T1 for the moment who seems to not only know how to use him, but make him feel good about himself. And he's really expressing that on the pitch now. And he's actually becoming really important for them, I think, now. I've always quite liked him as a player. I think, obviously, personalities clash sometimes. It's not unusual in football at all.
I realize I haven't really circled back, by the way, as well, to your question around Nicky Hyde. And, well, I'm not sure. I still don't know. It's still too soon, I guess. But like, if he goes on this tempo and winning games and ending in a good position, regardless of what that in the end will be after these playoffs, then maybe he will be in contention for the job, which I'm still then not necessarily convinced about that he is the right man for. But then he definitely gave himself the chance, I think, that you could say that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, as I was saying, he's certainly giving Bart Verheijga in particular, who I think will make the ultimate call on this, as he does with most things at club, a lot to think about here. This has obviously been rumbling on for a little while, and of course they still haven't appointed a new technical director yet, which is important here, because although they have somebody across the sports infrastructure generally, you know, that appointment hasn't been made, and that is important, because it is definitely more than an advisory role. So it'll be interesting to see which one comes first. You would expect the new technical director to come first for obvious reasons, but it might not work that way at Club Brugge because of the way they generally do their business. But yeah, certainly a lot for him to think about. Speaking of Club Brugge, interestingly, Mark Van Bommel saying this week, or hinting very heavily, that he thinks Club are probably favourites at the moment, or his favourites anyway, to win the title. I thought that was interesting. I mean, I think he's picking up on the fact, obviously, their form's improving and they're starting to look much better again at obviously the most important time of the season. Obviously, still to play Anderlecht again, another huge fixture on the calendar. I think that might be I think it's the penultimate weekend, something like that. So it could be an even bigger fixture than it is ordinarily, depending on where we are at that point as well. Antwerp not really deserving anything from this game, really. We mentioned Onyedika. Some Antwerp fans were a little bit perturbed that he didn't get a red card, actually, in this game. He had a slightly wild challenge, which I thought was a bad tackle, but I didn't think it was really deserving of a red. So I think the ref got that big call right. But yeah, Antwerp a bit like most of their season, they've been sort of solid enough the most of the time, but in a lot of the big games, they've just not been able to compete in large sections of the games, really, have they?
Yeah, that's zero goals and 0 points for them in these playoffs as well. Of course, in the first game, they were a bit unlucky with the red card against Anderlecht. Until then, they were quite good. They already just looking back at that, it's only 2 weeks ago that could have changed the fate of this playoffs already in for both these sides and everyone in between as well, as we have to say now even, which sounds weird. Yeah. So yeah, not much great at the great old at the moment, I guess you could say as well. But yeah, except Keita being back on the pitch, of course, you don't want to get back on the pitch or in starting 11 and then lose 3-0. But yeah, it's good to get some rhythm, I guess, in the end. Because I'm not sure. It still feels very early, but they might be shifting their focus towards the cup final now already as well. They weren't really not really into this game, except for I think the beginning of the second half they had a relatively good spell and one good chance for Ekelkamp, which could have made it 1-1 at that point, but it didn't happen, didn't capitalize, and yeah, apart from that, they didn't create that much. I just only want to, and it's not for Antwerp, just to stay on this game, like a quick shout out to Skoras, to scoring his first goal in the league as well for Club Brugge, which will definitely do his confidence a world of good. And that, and it's, yeah, like we say, like said before, just winning those games, it's very much a cliche, but it gives you a confidence boost, and it might lead to something. Or it gets broken down early, like in the first real away game that they have. Of course, I wish I had a glass ball to the crystal ball to look into, but I don't.
I think the psychology of the playoffs is always fascinating because you don't really have to play well, actually, and I'm sure that's the message of a lot of coaches. It's really. It's the old efficiency thing that we, you know, I mean, that's the one word probably we use 20 times every week here at the BFP. It's actually just about, you know, getting the result at this stage of the season. And a lot of coaches won't be too concerned about poorer performances if they get the results, because it's about that, obviously, and handling the pressure, both positively and negatively. And some sides, obviously, are managing that at the moment quite well, and others are wrestling with it a bit. Speaking of sides that like to wrestle metaphorically and literally, let's move to your boys, the Genkies. Genk drawing one each with Cercle this weekend, and how do you feel your side did this week, Joris? Because I thought on the whole they played quite well, ultimately let down by, you know, a nightmare bit of defending, really.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I would also still say it was probably their worst performance in these playoffs so far, but regardless, it could have and maybe should have been enough to win against Cercle Brugge here. But yeah, we come back to that efficiency, I suppose, as well. They, not only in finishing the chances, but they also didn't create that much themselves, although being largely in control and mainly defensively. Like, I don't know what I'm seeing the last few weeks. The side is really strong there now, and that turned their weakness into a strength with this tactical tweak that Franken did with a five at the back as well. Unfortunately, yes, it's still a game of efficiency. There were probably 90 long balls that the defense had handled really well, but ultimately there's one that they didn't. It's a sequence of errors even as well. Of course, first Sadiq missing the ball or misjudging the ball initially, probably first, then missing the ball, then Van der Voort trying to hold the ball instead of maybe just going for a safer option of pushing it out, pushing it wide. Yeah, and then, of course, being unlucky a little bit where it ends up at the feet of Olaigbe, we got equalized. But the first half from Genk was really strong. Second half, it also has been a bit of a team in these past few weeks. They were not that great attackingly anymore, but defended still really well. And I really never really was into much doubt, although I still felt it was only 1-0, of course, and that's, of course, partially and the issue there. They didn't create enough themselves, and they should have probably scored a bit more in the first half specifically. But yeah, it's one of those things. It happens. It's a huge blow, of course, if Genk really still wanted to be in like a title challenge. Not that I ever thought that they would be, but the more games you win, the more you think you believe in it, of course, and that's now a bit broken. Unfortunately, for me and for the fellow Genk fans. Few more things to mention about this game, around this game, maybe also first about Genk as well. So that's their 20th home playoff game unbeaten run now. So they haven't lost in 8 years at home in the playoffs, whenever they were in the playoffs, and not in every season that has been the case, of course, but still. Despite this disappointing result, this still stands, of course. What can I say as well? Yeah, Galarza. I don't know he's such a good player when he's like on. Let's put it like that. He has been the whole playoffs so far. It's also still a bit of a mystery, half mystery, why he hasn't featured that much before. But of course. Now it's a bit helped with Hannes' ongoing issues, stomach issues, mysterious issues actually as well. Mm-hmm. That plays in his favor, but he's really taking his chance so far. And then I'll quickly switch to Cercle, and then we can still talk about other things around the game as well, I guess. Cercle actually haven't won against Genk since Genk's last title winning season, when then they did win in Genk. I think that was maybe even the first loss of Genk that season, but I'm not entirely sure. The first loss in a long while, for sure, definitely. And Waardason at it again, of course. He doesn't get the assist because Sadiq touched the ball a bit, or obviously Van der Voort touches the ball, so he doesn't get the official assist, but still more or less got the assist for that goal and a few crucial saves, despite Genk not creating that much. The few times that they had a big chance, he was standing there in the way, wasn't enough for a clean sheet, but that was not up to him. And then around the game, I guess I'll already finish that part as well before you jump back in. They're both sides had an action against sexual abusive behavior. I'm not sure if I should mention it like that, if that's a correct translation, but more or less in that direction anyway, against sexual violence, of course, where both sides wear shirts with names on them of victims of this kind of behavior, and Yeah, okay. Maybe I should have started with this because it's a bit more trivial after this one. But of course, worth mentioning Cercle being 125 years old now officially as well. So yeah, congratulations Cercle on that. Yeah, Jubilee.
Yeah, they had they released some nice pictures actually over the last week. They had some functions, some events that obviously the club had organised to celebrate that birthday that were rather nice. And interestingly as well, that this all kind of coincides with Cercle being undefeated in the playoffs so far. And we spoke at the end of the regular season about what an achievement it was for them and an incredible reward for how consistent they've been, and just that strategy and template that's in place and the adherence to that, the alignment across the club is working, and this kind of proves it. And, you know, to go undefeated to start the playoffs kind of quite strongly suggests that, you know, not only deserve their place, but they're not here to make up the numbers, that's for sure. You know, Miro Muzic has said that a couple of times, you know, they're here really to challenge, and this is a side I think believe in themselves, because they can, you know, start the playoffs quite strongly like this and do well. So they haven't really taken their foot off the pedal since qualifying for the playoffs, which is important as well. So that tells me they're enjoying themselves still, yeah. and they haven't settled just for achieving that historic spot.
After two games, they already reached more. Well, so now it's already an additional point, but after two games, they already had more points than they had against the same sides in the regular season. So that's definitely a boost for them. Yeah, and also looking at that home away schedule, I guess like they dropped 2 points at home. Like the idea is that not that they will win the title. I don't think anyone at Cercle Brugge would have thought that, but that you have good playoffs, or ideally you win your home games and you draw your away games, of course. So that's definitely they're on schedule for that, because initially they dropped 2 points against Club Brugge, then technically, but they won away against Union. So they did their job there, and then now they drew away from home again. So that's all on schedule. Same goes for Genk, actually. They had won a home game, they had won an away game. Mm. Now they dropped 2 points at home. Yeah, it's all quite level on that. That's also why I'm still interested to jump back to that as well, like how Club Brugge will do win their first real away game. But we'll find out later.
Yeah, lots of questions as there is every week, and more questions come to you as we're analysing all of this. Let's move on, shall we, to playoff two, the European playoff, which is starting to hot up a little bit. There was a feeling that maybe Ghent were going to run away with it as they have done recently in the past as well. But things are getting quite interesting now. Obviously, score roundup. For you in playoff two, St Truiden drew 3-3 with Standard. Mechelen managed to turn around a two-goal deficit to beat Westerlo 3-2, and Leuven beat Ghent 2-1 to get their first win of the playoffs. And we should let's start at Dendrief, shall we, Joris? Because Ghent, I thought, you know, as they often do, wasted quite a lot of chances in this game and probably deserved a little bit more out of it. And this has kind of opened the door with Mechelen winning to make it really interesting, because they, you know, not only are Mechelen hot on Ghent's heels now, as they would hope and expect to be, but St Truiden aren't out of it yet at all either.
Yeah, that's still I would still call that an outside chance for St Truiden, but yes, regardless of that. Definitely a few interesting facts about the game between Leuven and Ghent as well. I haven't completely watched that myself, admittedly, but it was the first Leuven win against Ghent at home. It was also Van Hazenbroek's first loss against Leuven with any team he has managed. For the rest, I didn't really notice that much in this game. Yes, Ghent failed to score. They probably should have scored a few more. But was good to see Maartensbeek, especially his second. I think it was his second goal. His finish was really good. It was really a striker's finish, and we all know that they have been lacking a striker. Even though I have to give okay, it's a bit of a lame shout out, but to their striker, Wout Brunes, who actually finished off really nicely for the third goal, what would have been the third goal. Of course, he was offside, unfortunately for him, but that was a really nice dink over the keeper. But yeah. And yeah, Gent, yeah, failing to decide these playoffs completely, of course, as well, given other results and moreover, indeed, giving chances to other teams, especially Mechelen, I would mention there.
Yeah, well, of course, interestingly, Mechelen are playing the Buffaloes this weekend, so it's going to get even more interesting. Speaking of Mechelen, obviously, I was saying that they turned the game around.
Or not.
or not, yes, yeah, that's another possibility. Yeah, Mechelen managing to turn the game around against Westerlo after going 2-0 down. I suppose the real turning point, arguably, is Romeo Vermaet's red card. Obviously, everything changes then. It becomes a completely different second half at that point. It allows Mechelen to really have a go and step up a gear. But I don't know, the Vermaet red card, aside from being quite funny on the whole, I don't think I've ever seen two separate yellow cards within, I think it was 4 seconds. Was it 4 seconds, Joris? Something like that.
Probably. I think I've seen it, but I can't remember one. But I'm definitely sure it has happened before. But yeah, that was really a weird one. I hope in a way that we lack a bit of context, because if not, then it's also a very ridiculous red card. Yeah, yes, that first yellow you can give. Probably he was moaning a bit too much anyway. So yeah. I guess you could give that.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because like, I've watched it back several times, and I think the first one is more for slightly impeding the free kick, perhaps. It's difficult to tell. The second one is a lot more ambiguous. Either he said something, although there was a suggestion that as the ref moves past him, he goes to kind of gently grab the ref to engage him in conversation because he hadn't finished talking to him. And the ref took exception to that and went, "Nah, I'm not having this. The conversation's done," and gave him a second yellow. But it was all very bizarre. I think the important thing about this is Westerlo a better side when he plays. We've certainly seen that since he comes in. He offers them options, I think, and they just look generally a better side, not just up top, obviously, where he is. So I think to get such a needless red card, and admittedly, these playoffs are a bit of a free hit for Westerlo anyway. There's no real expectations of any kind at all for them in it. It's just must be massively frustrating for them, for him now to be, you know, suspended, you know, needlessly, you know, and he's a player who they'll be desperate they can get back next season, and that's something I'm sure they'll look at, but, you know, we don't know how that's going to work out, particularly with other things being up in the air at Club Brugge. Just hugely frustrating for them. Mechelen, I think, obviously, you know, hoping to push the Buffaloes all the way, and we'll find out whether, you know, they're able to sustain that challenge probably this weekend. That's a pretty big game coming up as well. Elsewhere in this playoff, the interesting thing I thought this weekend was Standard still unable to kill games. You know, looked like they were going to get the points this weekend, conceded twice late on, and they now are winless, I think, in 13 playoff games in total. So their playoff luck is no better than their luck throughout the regular season at the moment. A club that we're going to see a lot of changing in the summer as well. So their form isn't really improving, is it, Joris?
No, but I quickly want to come back to Vermaet. That was indeed the context I was thinking. I in a way, I hope that he said something, because otherwise it's really like, it's a referee, Nil, who is actually running into him for the second yellow card. And it very much looks like that he gives him the yellow, the second yellow card for that indeed. But like, he's the one actually to the offender. So, if there is any offender, or even in this case, of course, but it would not be Vermaet. But on the whole, of these playoffs, I'll also try to be a bit more wholesome. Slimani, first goal, important. Kobout, scoring streak in a way as well. Also, yet another comeback in the Europe playoffs in that game. Another one, indeed, already also taking place here for in a minor way between Sint-Truiden and Standard. But also last week, Mechelen actually experienced the opposite of what they achieved here. They're losing 3-2 against Sint-Truiden after leading 2-0. That could still be a crucial loss as well, of course, now. I'll just really quickly run through it, through jumping from game to game maybe, but I'll try to keep it a bit into oversight. But Alcocer at Westerlo getting his first start and a first goal as well, which is, of course, good. Jumping to Sint-Truiden and Standaarden. That the players for Sint-Truiden that have scored I found that a bit interesting. Like Boca had his second goal of the season, which is, well, for a position he's in, not unusual, I guess. But then the other two, Bertaccini and Kaya, both scored their first goals for Sint-Truiden this season as strikers. Of course, Bertaccini scored a few more already in the Challengers Pro League and has had less time to prove himself on this level. But and Kaya, that was a funny one. Celebration as well. I have to admit, these playoffs have gotten us a few really brilliant GIF moments already, and memes even that you could create out of them. But
I think one of the questions actually, you're right to mention Fatty Kaya actually, Joris, you know, his first goal and the exuberance in clashing. Unintentionally, of course,
running over Tanga, basically.
That's right. During his goal celebration, effectively, you know, so excited he was. I just wonder how long it's going to be before, you know, he gets to celebrate a goal again. That's something that I'm going to be watching out for, because I think all of us thought that he probably wasn't going to score at all. So yeah, it was actually a really nice moment. You know, Kanga's face too. You know, he looked like he was going to lamp him, to be honest. He was none too happy, but then maybe he'd completely forgotten the fact that it was his first goal as well. So yeah, kind of a really entertaining moment, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the one thing I have to say for Standaard, okay, in this one they had the cameo role, I guess, only, but in this entertainment factor, but they seem to be a bit more entertaining now. The pressure is off. Regardless, it depends a bit. They also already had a 0-0 in these playoffs as well, but at least last Friday they were. The brilliant second goal from Balikwisha. So go watch that back if you haven't seen it. They still have that lingering issue that doesn't seem to go away from not being able to really clinch games and get them over the line. That comes once in a while back and a bit too often. Of course, now it doesn't really matter for them. Their season is effectively over. For Sint-Truiden, I would say I have noted down draw just not enough to keep them in this Europe playoff race. But yeah, okay. Given Gent lost, maybe I have to retract those words temporarily. I fear, though, I don't think they will actually be. But they can still dream, and that's something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's really important. And they're actually scoring quite a lot of goals at the moment. You know, for a lot of this season, they've been playing really well, scoring in games, but not being able to kill games. And, you know, although they came from behind, you know, with two late goals this weekend, they are actually starting to take slightly more of their chances, which I think is really encouraging. And they've actually responded quite well in these playoffs, even though, like you were saying, nobody really expects them to clinch that European spot, but they've got themselves into a position where, yeah, you know, if they can maintain the goal scoring output that they've had since the playoffs started and some other things go their way, then kind of who knows. It's certainly interesting at the moment anyway. There's no doubt about that. Speaking of interest, let's jump on to the relegation playoff, kind of playoff three. Molenbeek beating Eupen 3-1 and Kortrijk losing 2-1 at home to Charleroi. Molenbeek's first win in 15 in the league, I think. Yannick Ferreira's obviously come in now, 4 points out of his first six. And Molenbeek have got themselves in a position where they've given themselves a real chance of at least securing the playoff spot to give themselves another crack at it, which is interesting. Charleroi safe now? I mean, not mathematically yet, but you would imagine it's going to be pretty hard to catch them now, isn't it, Joris?
Yeah, you would think so. I think I take that as well. Like, they were a very crucial winner that they got in the final minutes against Kortrijk. Because at one point in this game, they actually virtually were very much into this whole race of even going down immediately. Now I feel like they're 8 points ahead of two sides and 6 points of the other one, with only 12 to go in this playoffs as well, of course. So they should be safe. Indeed, they really need to maybe one win. Might also be worth mentioning for context as well, of course, to mention that first the first games that they had in these playoffs, which were all draws as well. Well, two draws, but since we haven't talked about them, that didn't change anything in the complexion. Except, of course, again, this home and away difference. But now Charleroi has broken that a little bit already as well, with winning away from home. Molenbeek, really starting really strong, and then maybe they finally got on the right appointment in Yannick Ferreira. Their win was also the first win of the relegation playoffs. That in front of an empty stadium, talking about the home and away thing again a little bit as well. Although quite some fans had gathered right outside of the stadium, yeah. And the players even celebrated outside of them. But yeah, first win, you already said it was a long streak, but also first win in 2024. That meant, and Gueye hadn't scored since the middle of December. I believe it was the 16th of December, which was also this last win, so that could be good for him and them as well, even though he initially actually missed the penalty who was it, Abe, I believe, scored the first goal on in the rebound. Abe also with a really nice header for the second goal, for Eupen. Solina back in goal might be worth mentioning. And Bialik finally getting some minutes as well now. Will it be enough to save them? Well, everything is really still to play for outside of that spot. That the real safe spot is probably not to give them anymore. But there's only 2 points still between the three sides fighting for one chance of survival still. Also worth mentioning, Eupen tripled their amount of penalties that they got inside this game. That they had gotten only one in the regular season. Now they had gotten two, of which they only converted one. But that on itself was worth a mention. Yeah, and moving over to the other game again as well. Quickly, again, I really touched on it as well. We jumped a bit, but 10th goal for Davies also deserve a shout out. And nonetheless, Kortrijk are really not in their, don't seem to be in their pre-international break form or pre-playoff break form or however you want to call it. Alexanderson was also, after that last game against Anderlecht, a bit disappointed that there was not a game next weekend. It looks like their flow indeed has been broken a bit. Mm. But all still very much possible for that second, their third bottom spot to get in the playoffs with a team of the Challenger Pro League. But worth mentioning, of course, only the second away win of the season for Charleroi in that game. And Coffee being lucky on an occasion as well, which is also already a chance to talk about some other news that broke about him in the past few days.
Yeah,
hours even.
That's right. Yeah. Just today, it's more or less, well, not official yet, but more or less done. Herve the Cat Coffee, who we're big fans of here at the BFP, and I'm sure you are as well. Really interesting goalkeeper. Looks very much to be on his way to Lens. Looks like there's a four-year deal on the table there. Charleroi are going to be earning themselves something quite close to, I think, $2 million. They did, Charleroi did exercise the one-year extension option that they had in his contract quite recently. And I think they did that, it looks now, in order to kind of help ensure that they got a somewhat reasonable fee for him. So it looks like he'll be departing in the summer, and he's a really important player for them. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what they do there, you know, because they've got lots of things to consider as far as their financials are concerned, you know, and a rebuild in lots of ways as well. There's a lot of players there who've been told they don't have a future and have to find other clubs as well. So that's one of a number of clubs that we're going to see a lot of change at over the summer, one to keep an eye on. Interestingly, as far as this relegation playoffs concerned, Joris, I think the upcoming double header between Molenbeek and Kortrijk is probably going to be crucial. Just worth reminding everybody that playoff three has less games. Obviously, there are four sides rather than six in it, so you have six games to save yourself, rather than the 10 that you do elsewhere. So, you know, you really do have to perform. And you would imagine that if Molenbeek could get another win away at Kortrijk this weekend, you know, they really would become seriously hot favourites to secure that playoff spot, to give themselves another shot at survival. So that's one to definitely keep an eye on. And I just wanted to ask you, just before we move on to the Challenger Pro League, and there's lots of news out of there this weekend, Joris, I've found the games in the relegation playoff quite difficult to stomach so far. Not surprisingly, you know, this is a playoff that takes place between sides that are all struggling, but the quality of the football has been quite difficult to digest, and it does look like, as you would expect, it's possibly and to some extent going to come down to which side maybe makes less mistakes. At the moment, there seems to have been a slight positive bounce for Molenbeek with Yannick Ferreira coming in. That's for sure. He's obviously just in the door, just a couple of games, but, you know, as I was saying, 4 points out of six, so they have had a little bounce. Kortrijk haven't been playing badly by any means, and I think the big worry for Alexanderson now, you were talking about their rhythm being interrupted slightly. They've started these relegation playoffs taking the lead in both of their games and not managing to get it over the line, and that will be a slight worry for them as well now that the stakes are risen. So this game against Molenbeek this weekend, which I think we've referenced a few times even before the playoffs started, we felt they would be really big games. The way things went this weekend just kind of backs up that's even more the case now.
Oh, I thought there was a question coming, but
I'm happy to agree with me.
I also always go on tangents, so I'm the last person to criticize you for that. But I'm sorry for the listeners. But it's difficult to judge, but indeed, the games that I have seen or pieces of games I have seen, they were not the ones. Well, I think Ben probably fell asleep for those as well, even though we know, especially out of the three of us as well, still I think he's the one that enjoys this kind of scrappy games the most. But I'm sure he still would have struggled regardless of the recent events in his life. It's difficult to make to give a prediction here. Eupen don't really seem to improve, and that's not really a surprise. But on the other hand, just one surprise result or one bounce, yeah, that could be enough to give them at least another chance, and then, you know, maybe they'll pick up some more points. It also could now start playing a role whether Charleroi is already safe or not when you play against them, the other sides. Although, of course, I think most players at Charleroi, yeah, that will be, they might not have the pressure that could swing both ways. And they might be fighting for a contract either at Charleroi or at another club next season even, or so. Depends on squad management potentially there as well. But it's really difficult to predict. It indeed looks like Molenbeek is a bit more favorable to be in that playoff spot, but I wouldn't bet anything on it,
To be honest. There's a long way to go yet, you know, even with four games to play for these sides. Yeah, there absolutely is. It's a point worth making again. Let's jump down, shall we? We'll jump down to the Challenger Pro League, which has reached match day 29 this weekend, the penultimate weekend of the regular season before the playoffs start there. I'll do a scores roundup before we get into the guts of the news this week. Club Next lost 2-1 at home to RFC Liège. Young Genk drew 1-1 with Frank Baran. Liers drew 1-1 with Anderlecht Futures. Denza beat Lommel 3-2 in one of the big games down in the Challenger Pro League this weekend. Dender lost 4-1 to Zulte Waregem. Beveren beat champions Beerschot, who had nothing to play for really this weekend, 2-0 at the Freetiel. SL 16 lost 2-1 to Sarang, and Patro Eisden lost 3-2 to Ustane. So a lot happening down in the Challenger Pro League because things are reaching kind of the critical stages there. We know now, obviously, Joris, that Beerschot are champions. They are back in the Pro League. Nobody's really pushed them too hard this season. You know, they've done very well considering what's going on off the pitch at the club. They have brought in the former chief operating officer at Ustend this week in a consultancy chief executive role, although the expectation is he will stay on as chief executive. The owners are still trying to sell the club. It's worth underlining that as well. More to come on that, that's for sure. But yeah, congratulations to Beerschot. They are back. We have an Antwerp derby back on the fixture schedule next season. What we don't know yet is the battle for that second automatic promotion spot is going to go to the final weekend, as we've been saying for ages that we thought it would. It's between, obviously, Dender, Denza and Lommel. Dender hot favourites. All they have to do is win. They are away to Frank Baran this coming weekend. Quite a favourable fixture for them. Win that and they are promoted along with Beerschot. Denza and Lommel have to win. Hope Dender lose. Lommel need both Dender and Denza to lose and them to win. So there's a few different connotations here, but Dender start very much as favourites. Worth pointing out as well that RFC Liège are still in with an outside chance of squeaking into the playoffs as well on the final weekend. SL 16 as well, they're gone now. They're relegated. They disappear to amateur football. And the other big unknown, which will reach its conclusion this weekend, Joris, is the second automatic relegation spot. Will it be Sarang or will it be Ustend who go? Very interesting this weekend. It looked like results were going to go against both these clubs, but they both got good results in the end, which mean going into the final weekend, Ustend have to win to ensure that they stay up. Sarang have to win and hope that Ustend don't if they're going to spring a surprise on the last weekend. Lots going on at Sarang this week. We learned that Bernard Serin, the president there, who's also the president at Metz, the parent club, wants to sell. So perhaps that's a sign that they've washed their hands of them now and think they're going down. Whether they go down or not this weekend, we don't know whether that will influence any potential sale, but they are talking apparently to some local Liège entrepreneurs, which is interesting. So the club may yet end up in local hands, but lots to look out for down there this weekend, Joris, eh?
Yes, this will be a roller coaster of emotions, to put out a cliche. To start the weekend, all games taking place on Friday at between 8 and 10, I believe. Well, local time, so local, yeah. Belgian time. So for you, that would be 7 and well, around the world anyway. But local time, between 8 and 10 and in the evening, and that will be, yeah, like so many things to play for. I already found it a bit weird that already the last weekend Serin and Oostende didn't play at the same time. I felt that that could have helped a little bit. Ultimately, they both won, might not have made a difference. Although I still feel suspicious. Okay, this is the way that Serin in the final minutes turned it around against an already relegated, well, local, you could say rival, I guess, but on the other hand, also maybe not at that point. It feels a bit weird that Oostende then won themselves against Azen as well. Beerschot showing what I meant before, but I guess when the pressure is off, actually, who knows what would happen in these playoffs? Because I guess this happens more often with teams that are really champions, of course, as well. But and that would not be the case with Charleroi, but just showing things that how things can go. They still are in the best position, but that still feels a bit weird as well after losing 4-1 at home and getting red cards and so on. The fixture list seems to be in their favor. Same goes at the bottom for Oostende, of course, who now also have to play an already relegated difficult to see not them not winning, but we've seen so many things in this league, among which a 6-match ban for a certain manager, didn't we?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, Patro Eisden's T1 Steinsteinen over the last week got himself a 6-match ban from the FA. And if you didn't see this one, we're going to probably, we'll fill you in now. So basically the 6-match ban is because he punched his own brother, Joris, who, if you don't know, forms part of his coaching staff. The greatest part of it was his own defence. He argued in his defence that he shouldn't have been punished by the FA because it was a family matter between the two brothers, which I thought was brilliant. It didn't wash, of course, but that gave me a bit of amusement this week.
And also of course mentioning the 6 matches on its own is, I don't know how many would we have received, but it's also because of some precedents, which some outstanding conditional.
Yeah, you're right. The initial ban, I think, is just for 2 games, but there was conditional suspended bans that have now become active because of this, which totals 6. So yeah, it's as funny as it is bizarre as well. They do say you shouldn't work with relatives. Maybe Stein will take that advice now. Maybe
imagine them going up now ultimately, and then having to miss him in the first games already. Okay, I first want to say missing one game, but now I realized, of course, there are the 2 of those extra games would already be the games would be in the playoffs anyway. So my comment does not really make sense. My bad. But still, going into these playoffs without your manager for, well, most part of these playoffs is actually already would already be a weird feat on its own.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, you know, and it's a great point, Joris. Patro Eisden are kind of certain to be taking part in the playoffs. This ban could yet come back to bite both brothers in a way that they didn't expect. Loads to watch out for, as Joris was saying. It's going to be wild this weekend as that reaches its conclusion. We often joke about double screening here at the BFP, watching more than one game at once. This might be a weekend where I might have to have 3 screens on the go at the one time, because obviously there's Denza are going for it, as are Lommel and Dender, and then down at the bottom, as you were saying, Joris, Oostende at home in the final weekend against SL16, which, given a choice, that might be most sides' pick of the fixtures in that situation, but it doesn't always work like that, of course. So nothing is done yet. Sarang at home on the final weekend to Denza, who of course are going to be pushing really hard to try and squeak that last automatic promotion spot. So both those sides have got a lot to play for, and that Sarang-Denza game could be a goal fest for various reasons. So, you know, if you're going to watch one of them, that might be the one to kind of keep an eye on, I think. What do you reckon, Joris?
Well, yeah, it's just going to be madness. I don't know. I don't know which one to pick an eye on. Pick out here.
Yeah, or you could
very little. There's not anything at stake. Nothing at stake because of all that. Of course, 6 teams at least fighting for playoffs, but then also teams in the playoffs fighting for promotion straight away still. And then, of course, at the bottom, there's some things going on. Then there's some the side story, which is less interesting, admittedly, but like who's going to become the better of the youth sides and so on as well. Yeah, but just I think in all of the games, there's so much at stake. Okay, so yeah, no, literally all games are interesting. And then, okay, yeah, I was mistaken. There's one game that takes place on Saturday between the Futures from Anderlecht and Club Next, because both these sides don't have anything to play for, which which by default then means that, all, like I said, all these other games have things at stake for the teams involved, at least one side in those games, and generally both sides still are fighting for something.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've been saying this for weeks now, you know, the three of us. The Challenger Pro League's been getting really, really exciting, particularly in the second half of the season. And the competitiveness down there is really, really wild. And, you know, you do not want to be the side, whether it's Molenbeek or somebody else, coming into that relegation playoff final, playing against one of these sides, because, you know, absolutely nothing is guaranteed at all. And there's been lots of sides who, you know, we expected to do better this year that haven't, one of which obviously is Beveren, of course, who, although they still stand a very, very slim outside mathematical chance of squeaking in, highly unlikely, they today, a bit of news out of the free teal, Tom van den Abeele, the sporting director there, parted company with the club. Things haven't really worked out with the players that came in this season, and the fans have been quite vociferous and vocal in their opposition to Tom van den Abeele's contribution this season. The Beveren fans, I think, blame Tom van den Abeele for the most part for the way the season's panned out. It's always not as simple as that. There are a number of issues at play, but yeah, Tom van den Abeele has left the club this afternoon, Joris, and they are now on the hunt both for a T1 and a new sporting director. So lots for the owners at Beveren to ponder over the next few weeks as they plan ahead for next year.
Yep, definitely. And that goes for a few clubs, I think, as well. I'm curious if Zulte Waregem would miss out on these playoffs, then you can also only call their season a disaster. Given, well, the amount of money that they still have in the squad that hasn't paid off, which you already can say, I guess, but maybe they still get away with it, that there's still that chance through these playoffs. But regardless of that, it hasn't been their best season. Also, well, circling back to one of the things you said before, which is also in sportive ways not so important at the moment yet, but Beerschot appointing Thorsten Theis there. I don't know what's happening. Why do clubs keep making these stupid mistakes in their decisions? Yes, I might have eczema in my face in a year or so, but like I don't think so. Why would that ever be a good appointment? I have no idea.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. I mean, that was confirmed, I think, yesterday, actually. You know, as I was saying earlier, you know, former chief operating officer at Oostend certainly knows the Belgian scene very well. So in that sense, it kind of makes sense. Lots of interesting things that I was alluding to about Beerschot off the pitch. Obviously, the owners are still looking to sell. But as we now know, there is a bit of a disagreement at board level about who the club should sell to. Some of the board members would like to sell to potential Chinese investors. The current owners wouldn't like to do that, so that there's no real agreement in terms of where we're going with this. So there is some potential trouble on the horizon there, perhaps, that probably isn't going to be a positive influence on the park. So you would hope over the summer that they could resolve that in a way that puts them in a better position going into the start of next season, now that they're back in the Pro League. But that's something to keep an eye on, because it's definitely worrying. And when I saw that confirmed yesterday, I thought, much like you, Joris, I thought, I'm not convinced by this. It doesn't reassure me looking at this from the outside at all.
Yeah, no, like, couldn't agree more. There's not that much more to say. Like, he wasn't really taken seriously at Oostend. It's also what I've got out of some sources.
That's right.
Its own already. It's like, and of course, how the club actually has been going there. Okay, that's not down to him alone. Definitely, there are some overlying issues. Mark Koeke there. But definitely. Anyways, I don't know. Why disappointment? Like, yes, there's some links with the Chinese then, okay. But then there seems to be some... to paint that picture maybe a little bit, like the Chinese, there's Chinese interest in to take over Beerschot finally. Yeah. But the current owners, the Saudis, who also are involved with Sheffield and other sites, I believe, are actually not in favor of that. But now, so here, Thorsten Theis comes in because he has those links to maybe help satisfy those needs of the Chinese and get a bit more of a liaison with them. And they, based on more like other people inside the club, I think it's more like the regional Flemish people still in the club, without naming names here. But there's definitely some things going on behind the scenes there, as you already alluded to. Curious how this will go. But on your hand, also not so curious given Beerschot's history already as well. But hopefully it will not go down as usual, but we kind of can predict that it will, I fear.
Yes, yeah, a lot of people have kind of pointed that out this weekend. There was something that did amuse me, actually. There was once their promotion and it was confirmed as champions a few days ago, there were some people talking on social media, what to expect from Beerschot next season. And, of course, that was a bit of a gift to Beerschot's rivals, Antwerp fans, who en masse said not very much, which was to be expected. So be careful what questions you ask on social media, that's what I would say. But, congratulations to them. They're
that's
back,
for sure.
But they do have some issues to grapple with there, don't they? To kind of get their house in order, if you like. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's also a joke I already heard in the past few weeks since the promotion was confirmed. Like, well, what's going to be with two Antwerp sides in the league again? Well, it's two Antwerp sides which have their own areas of financial issues, so there's some jokes about that going on.
It's a very good point Joris makes. Don't throw stones at glass houses. I think that's the as they say, if English is your first language. I think we've just about covered it for this week, Joris. Thanks for joining me.
Welcome, as always. Happy to be back as well after my short break, and hopefully, hopefully I sound all right since the move and the acoustics. I know it has been different as before. It felt like it shouldn't be an issue, but if so, then I'm sorry for the listeners. And that should improve. We're still a bit inside in boxes and so on. You can't see that or hear that, hopefully. But when that era part of my life or this part of my life is over, then it should get better again.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to join us from a box, a box somewhere next week.
To be honest, yes, the boxes could be more acoustically available or better suited acoustically. Yeah. I'll discover that issue as well.
One thing's for sure, the boxes will still be there next week. If you like what we do here at the BFP, and as I always say, why wouldn't you? You do know how to get in touch with us. You can get in touch with each of us individually on our social media, or you can get in touch with us on Instagram or our X account as well. If you really like what we do, then you can leave a little donation at our Buy Me a Coffee account as well, which helps us contribute towards some of the running costs of the BFP as well. Whatever you're up to this coming week, take care, have a good week, everybody, and we will speak to you soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.